Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour, and happy Monday. Today is January the 15th, Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. And as we're thinking about the life of Dr. Martin Luther King and some of the amazing things he said, I was reminded of a little list of 10 quotes that my friend Brian from my Bible study sent me that he really liked. And I thought I'd read some of them to get the day started, this hour going. Dr. King said, "The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy." Here's another one. "Nothing in all the world is more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity." Ooh. Here's another one. "Life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others?" Another one. "We must accept finite disappointment, but never lose infinite hope." I like that one. "Love is the only force capable of transforming an enemy into a friend." That's pretty powerful. Here's another one. "The function of education is to teach one to think intensively and to think critically, intelligence plus character. That is the goal of true education." Dr. King Jr. also said, "Faith is taking the first step even when you don't see the whole staircase." I like that. And another one is, "The time is always right to do what is right." And the last couple are this one: "In the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends." And one more: "Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that." Some powerful words from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And what a great man of faith that Dr. Martin Luther King was. And we're celebrating him today. We're going to have some very great interviews from guests coming up in just a few minutes. But for now, we'll take a break and we'll continue the Early Morning Late Show in just a minute.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could
while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
And if you know Monday mornings, you know that is the theme song to my friend from prestigious West Des Moines, my colleague and friend Patrick Albanese, who happens to be with me in studio this morning. Hello, Patrick.
Yes, I made the trek. And by the way, and this is not to take away from any of Jesus' accomplishments, but when he said, "Love thy neighbor," he never had to navigate the 35W ever. He never had to navigate the exit and entrance ramps in Minnesota. It's impossible to love your neighbor.
It's a little bit tough,
isn't
it?
It's a little bit tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm finding that the worse condition the vehicle is, the worse condition the driver seems to be operating under, and or I don't know what came first, the junky car or the poor driving skills.
Yeah, you always know if you see duct tape on a car that there's probably going to be not so good driving habits. That's just an observation.
I'm guessing,
I hate to say it,
they probably aren't as concerned about your finish when they're driving and or parking next to them.
That's true.
I mean, when you go to a parking lot, and if your car is relatively new, what do? Do you park next to the not-so-nice vehicles, or do you go, "Where are the Teslas?"
Right, exactly.
Those guys get out of their cars very carefully.
Yes, they do.
They're not going to nick my door because they're afraid they're going to get a chip on their door edge. That's are the guys I hang with.
I like those guys. Yeah. All right, Patrick, Martin Luther King Day. We're celebrating Dr. King's birthday. He was born on this day in 1929, which I guess would make him about 89 years old if he were alive today. But one thing that he would probably feel real good about is since they've been recording this in 1972, black unemployment is at its lowest, 6.8 unemployment for African Americans.
I think there would be a lot of things he'd be happy about. I mean, we had the first African American president, obviously. I think, and this is just me throwing this out there, you know, there'd be some things he might be upset about, saying, you missed my point about colorblind.
Of course.
You missed that. You know, I didn't want you to divide up into, you know, everything is based on, you know, on race or gender. We're getting kind of into fractional groups of people at this point in time. I mean, it's we have hate crimes that protect a specific group. I don't think that would have been something he would have been for.
I would agree.
Yeah,
I would agree.
But I don't know the guy.
No.
No.
I did have a chance to speak to his niece, Alveda King.
Yes.
And she was an absolute delight. And a little bit later in the program, we're going to hear from her. And we'll also, she was talking about, I said to her, what was it like hanging around, you know, with your dad and your dad's brother, who was Martin Luther King Jr.?
Yeah.
And, you know, what was it like? And she said, lots of laughter, lots of joy, lots of fun. And I said, well, so what would go on? And she said, well, there'd be sometimes just spontaneous singing.
Wow.
And I said, well, how about you give me some now? And then she produced it on the spot.
Oh, that's
It was
wonderful.
A beautiful thing.
As I understand it, you didn't want Uncle Marty to do the Thanksgiving prayer because you'd never get to eat it. It's like, oh, he's a stem winder. Oh, it's good. This is fantastic stuff, but I'm hungry.
Yeah.
I met, which was the daughter, and she passed away a number of years ago. But when my wife was working at Cornell University, his daughter came and she directed Raisin in the Sun. And we spent a little bit of time with her, although I was just too nervous to say, tell me a little bit about your dad.
Nah,
you know,
because I
figured that somebody like that's going, do you want to talk to me about me, or
Ever?
Do you just want to talk about my dad?
That's one of the downfalls of having an uber famous person in your life who's a parent.
Yeah, that's why I worry about that for my kids.
Don't worry, they're safe.
They're safe.
Yeah. So as we look at the economy, Patrick, and we see that even Walmart has raised their hourly wage to $11 an hour.
Yeah.
Not an awful thing. More people getting a little bit more money in their paycheck.
I love that companies are doing this voluntarily because they're making the decision. They have money to play with now. Whereas, you know, when government coerces it, it always seems to set up to fail. You know, you have these cities that have tried that experiment. I was just reading about a pizzeria chain in New York that they got rid of a couple of their pizzerias because the new minimum wage laws that were being forced upon them, kicked in if you had 30 restaurants or more. Can you take a guess as to how many restaurants they currently own?
Yeah.
Would it be just 29?
Yeah, I think 29 is the right number.
They had 40, they're down to 29.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's the thing I don't like about engineered societies is they seem to always overlook human nature. What would somebody do? It's a kitchen table issue. You say, well, let's see. If I make this much money, I get free health care, for instance. Mm-hmm. They'll pay for my health care. If I make $5,000 more, I have to pay for my health care, which is going to cost me $10,000 a year in deductible or in premiums.
In premiums.
And then another $10,000 to $15,000 worth of deductibles. Seems to me the smart move is don't work as much and get the free stuff. And they wonder, it's like, wow, why are people tapping into the free stuff? It's like, it's human nature.
It is human nature.
We sit at the kitchen table and we say, what will work best for our family? We're not trying to hurt anybody else. We're not trying to, you know, say, golly, too bad for those other guys that make all that money. They're going to have to pay for my health care. You're just looking at it saying, this is not going to work for me, but here's a way to make it work.
Mm-hmm. And you look at the way in which the stock market is at new record levels, and you look at businessman Jeff Bezos, whose estimated worth is $106 billion.
Yeah.
He's Lex Luthor.
He's
take over the
Lex
world.
Lex Luthor. Are we going to Addis Ababa, Mr. Luthor? He's going to buy
yes, sir,
up a
Mr.
whole
Luthor.
Bunch. Yes, sir, Mr. Luthor. He's going to buy a whole bunch of desert land in Nevada. It's like, and then he can probably make his own like hydrogen bomb and knock California to the sea. It's amazing because the other day they said he was only worth $105 billion. I'm thinking, did he just make $1 billion in 2 days? You know, by the way, some of that money is yours and mine buying those Amazon products.
Oh, no, I know that to be true.
Yeah.
I mean, is there talk of him buying Target? Did I hear that, or is that crazy talk?
I don't know.
I need to be more careful what I say.
I haven't figured out what he did with Whole Foods. It's still the same place.
Yeah.
So he didn't change it much. The prices did not go down. And so I think, well, he just bought something. He bought yet another asset, and it increased his worth. I don't want to be upset. I'm more power to him.
Mm-hmm.
But I hate coming in second. And at $106 billion, I'm second.
Yeah. Yeah. He is absolutely not filing the short form, which is such a convenient for us.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Postcard.
But,
I
yeah.
think he just fills out his form. He does it on the back of $100 bills. He
yeah.
does his taxes.
Yeah. It is appealing to think that the tax reform will simplify the tax code, because anyone who wants to try to file their taxes on their own might be a little bit foolish unless they know what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, there's also another thing. And, you know, this, I think, takes place whether you do your taxes yourself or you have a semi-professional do it like me. That is the...
Is that a commercial?
It is.
I don't think it was
a commercial.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just go to my website, pay extra for your taxforms.com.
Okay, there you go.
But do you ever fill out your taxes, even when you have a pro do it and say, you know, yep, that's 100% right?
Oh, no.
You're always thinking, boy, oh, boy, should I have deducted, you know, I work as a magician a lot, and you're thinking, okay, do I put down every deck of cards I ever bought? What if I bought a deck of cards and we used it at home to play, you know, canasta?
Yeah, right.
I don't even know if you use cards for that.
No.
And so you always have this cloud hanging over you. And so for me, the simple form isn't just about the simplicity of getting the taxes done, but a little bit more worry-free, where if the standard deduction is better than trying to itemize every tube of toothpaste you bought,
mm-hmm.
and you know we're talking about mutual friends.
I know who you're talking about.
this tube of toothpaste is for when I'm working.
Right,
yeah,
right.
So,
oh, boy.
But, yeah, you say, look, a lot less red flags will go up, and my fear of an audit will go down if I say, gosh, it's just better.
Yeah.
To take that standard deduction.
Oh, much better.
And it covers everything, and then I don't have to worry. So for
exactly.
me, that's the bigger deal for me.
Exactly. Patrick, let me take a little break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. Be back in just a minute.
Check is getting lighter, but I'll take it a day at a time. First of the month keeps it coming up much too much, but I'll make it a day at a time.
Nice.
The Sting. Who's doing this?
Tommy Emmanuel.
Tommy Emmanuel.
The finest, one of the finest guitarists
yes.
in the world. I saw him live in concert, and I've never, ever quite seen anything like it.
You know, I meant to drop a jealousy bomb on you.
Go ahead.
I will be seeing Bella Fleck soon.
Wow. That was a kidney punch.
That was a kidney punch.
That hurt. That one hurt.
Yeah, and your one remaining kidney, I got it.
All right, Patrick, it's Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday today, and here's a tweet that we got from Dr. Carl Ellis, African-American friend and guest of the show. He said, nonviolence succeeded in changing structures not because it was nonviolent, but because it had a strength derived from God.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
I think that when we look at some of the movements that are going on now, like these Antifas, or do you say Antifa? I don't even know. It doesn't matter. I'm not a member, and I don't even get their emails. But you say, you guys start out with violence. You show up at protests with rocks. That might be kind of counterproductive.
It's Ernest T. Bass.
It's yeah, or Francis Sawyer.
From one or the other.
Yeah, from Stripes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were just, their first reaction is, you know,
yeah,
violence.
Yeah.
And granted, you know, we talked earlier about driving, you know, in Minneapolis, and my first reaction very often is violence.
Yeah.
But I keep it with inside the vehicle.
Good for you.
It's something I've been working on for years.
We have to be reminded, though, that our strength is from God, and it's not from anything but. And let's always look to God first and foremost for our strength, and then the restraining power of the Holy Spirit. Because had you not had that, Patrick, you might have been a little bit more violent on the road.
And what is our reluctance, our resistance to handing things over to God? What is our problem with that? You know, we always want to call the shots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's I think I mentioned it to you the other day. How can we want God to do things our way, but we don't want to do anything His way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's laid out some pretty explicit instructions. Yeah. We're like, yeah, that's not going to work for me.
And we oftentimes want God to meet us on our terms versus us meeting him on his terms. Because that's just the way we are. We've got our little own quirks and things that we think God would be happy to cooperate with. The truth is, he does not cooperate with sin and disobedience.
Yeah, and we're always, of course, fearful of saying, you know, God, just show me what it is you want me to do for you, provided it doesn't involve any overseas travel. You know, and when I say overseas travel, you know, I mean, I'm fine with, you know, anywhere where I don't have to get some sort of injection.
Right.
That's, you know, if I need to be, you know, inoculated from some sort of disease that only happens in a certain place, I'm like, I'm not your guy.
I'm open to the idea of smuggling Bibles into Beloit, Wisconsin.
Yeah, exactly. The penalty can be pretty harsh.
Yeah, of course it can.
Yeah.
All right, Patrick, here in the Twin Cities, we've got a fairly major event coming up. The first part of next month, it's the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 52 is going to take place here in the Twin Cities. And, of course, the mayhem is going to be something. They have a zip line that's over the river, you have to make a reservation. They only have 10,000 slots available.
Oh.
All 10,000 slots sold out in less than an hour.
How much for one of the 30. Slots?
30 a pop.
$30 or $30,000. I don't even know if it's a Super Bowl, you know. You know, you talk big numbers now.
I know.
You got a radio show.
I'm acting like a big shot, aren't I?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's like it used to be when they said 100 big ones, it was $100. For you, it's $100,000.
Yeah.
Wow. $30.
$30. But I'm just saying the speed at which things are being gobbled up here in the Twin Cities. And
I know
you're going to be around because you're doing a triple espresso here in town.
Yep.
And you're coming up weekly to do that. So I'm always glad I can get the chance to see you and have you come into the studio when possible.
Yeah, I'm going to zip line in next time.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I think might as well set one up. Obviously, it's very popular.
Mm-hmm. But one of the things that's happening with any major event like this is the complete influx of sex trafficking and prostitution that comes into a city, as you know.
Yeah.
With it comes some economic prosperity opportunities, but it also comes with a lot of moral filth as well.
Oh, you know, we have, and I didn't find this out till recently, and Rebecca will back me up on this, or I'll never speak to her again.
Mm-hmm.
But we have this little thing called the Drake Relays. And the Drake Relays, you go, well, it's Drake University, and then they have these races and, you know, various track and field events. I had no idea. In the country, as I understand it, it is one of the biggest sex trafficking events in this country.
Are you kidding?
That's very strange, but true.
Yeah.
The Drake Relays? Drake University in Iowa?
Yeah, a little, you know, people are running the 100-meter dash. I don't know if they do metric or not.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah.
I've been trying to do calendars and metric. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I just found this out recently because I was helping a friend who's producing an anti-trafficking film. And he said that. I said, that can't be true.
Can't be.
I go, this is a little, it's a race.
Mm.
It's a foot race.
Mm.
He says, it's huge. And part of it, I think, and you'll know, is it just the proximity? You know, if the United States were a giant LP, Des Moines, Iowa would be the hole in the center.
Okay.
You know, so we're at the
intersection of two major interstate. It's at that crossroads,
yes,
so to speak, of 80 and 35.
Uh-huh.
And so it's very easy to transport anything to that area and then be gone in a short period of time. And I'm also afraid that it should be more of a family kind of atmosphere at that event. But it also means that lots of people are away from their homes.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like they can be out from under the watchful gaze of the people they're supposed to be. Again, it's that traveling aspect. You're coming in from out of town, new place. It's like, I don't have to worry about my reputation.
Know. Right.
Mm-hmm. Patrick, I know you've heard this expression before, but the out of town you is the real you. I mean, you and I have traveled so much, and we've been with other performers who have been away from their significant other. And sometimes, you know, the real person comes out.
Yeah. I'm always on my best behavior on the road. I'm terrible at home.
Yeah.
Just terrible.
Yeah, you're a mess.
I'm not enjoyable to be around at all.
No.
No, you know, it's that makes sense if you're looking for the. I remember at my church, one of the men's groups, a guy got up and talked about how, you know, he took a job specifically on the road so that he could act up.
Really?
Yeah.
And this is he came to faith, or I hope?
This is before he embraced his faith.
Okay.
You know, he did the obligatory church visits.
Okay.
But you know, salvation did help him. But he said, I would plan my next affair.
Oh, boy.
I hadn't even met the person yet. I was going, yep, I think I'm ready. It's been weeks. It's time to do one.
Mm.
And so he took a job where he was on the road so that he could pull that off. And you think, wow, I always forget how people think, but that's the devil in the details, or the real devil,
mm-hmm.
is that he's working on a subconscious level. And he's saying, you know what, you needed this job, looks really good for you. And he knows that what your weakness is, let's say that in this particular guy's case, that was his weakness. And so the devil says, let's just put it all in place. You get to make the choices, but I know what you're going to choose because
mm-hmm.
I'm just whispering.
Yeah. So, you know, as much as there will be some celebration with a Super Bowl coming to a brand new stadium in an exciting city such as Minneapolis, there's also along with it a lot of sin and evil and darkness. And I guess I'm just saying it's time to start praying more and more for that event, because as you know, we want to pray against anything from the kingdom of darkness and anything that would be devastating morally to our city. It's, you know, any city's bad enough in USA.
Yeah. I don't think that ever goes out of style.
Yeah.
The praying thing.
Never does.
No, never does.
I'm always a big fan of lots of prayer. Patrick, thanks so much for being in studio with me today. Always love to see you. And we'll take a very short break and continue our special Martin Luther King Jr. Day show in just a minute. Stevie Wonder on Martin Luther King Day. It's awfully nice. If you have the day off, you're probably not hearing my voice because you're still sleeping. That's A-okay with me. We'll take a little break for news, and when we come back, more of the show in just a minute. Good morning. We are back. It is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And not that long ago, I had a chance to speak to Dr. King's niece, Alveda. Let's hear from her. We are living in a world right now that is lacking a lot of hope. There's work to do, isn't there?
Well, you know, there's a song I learned as a little girl, and it says, be careful, little eyes, what you see. Be careful, little ears, what you hear.
Alveda, can you sing a little of that?
Like that. I can try. My voice sometimes is here. Let's sing.
I just want to hear the tune.
Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see. Oh, be careful, little ears, what you hear. There's a Father up above looking down on you with love. Oh, be careful, little hearts, what you feel. So that's a song.
Oh, that's
I probably
fun.
Learned it in Vacation Bible school, maybe. But it just came across my remembrance right then as you were talking. So we have to overcome evil with good. And as we do that, and then God being good gives us the strength, and we have to have faith. We have to have hope. As you ask about, is there hope in the world? We have to have agape love, God's love, and not to be self-righteous or judgmental and pointing out all the wrong that people are doing. We should make a correction there and say there's a better way, but not like, be like me. I'm not doing that, so don't you do it. Well, the reason I'm not doing that is because God's arms are around me. So come into the circle of the love of God. And that is what Jesus was teaching. The disciples were wanting to condemn and get rid of the bad people. And Jesus said, look, that's not what I came for. I came to seek and save the lost. And so we have to remember to shine that light so that people can see the way to Christ.
That was Alveda King, the niece of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Thank you so much, Alveda. We're going to have that available in podcast form in some way on myfaithradio.com. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute.
What's the most critical problem facing this country today? This is Jim Garlow. Here's how some responded to that question. More than half of those surveyed responded, the economy is the most critical problem. Not surprising. But what is surprising is how few people thought the most crucial problem has anything to do with moral values. Even though our media is full of reports of moral scandals, lies, cover-ups, and questionable political deals. And we fail to see the connection. We're in the mess we're in because of the weak moral values, the greed, and dishonesty. Make no mistake about it. The problem in our economy and anything else you might name is related to biblical values. The result is government thievery, excessive debt, and the theft of life from those who are not even yet born. Moral uprightness, that's the most critical problem facing this country today. This is Jim Garlow.
Welcome back to the show, and happy Monday. It is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. We are celebrating that. And I have on our studio line Jason Cook from the Gospel Coalition. We've got Martin Luther King Conference coming up in Memphis in April, which we're awfully excited about. We want to hear lots and lots about that. Good morning, Jason.
Hey, good morning, Bill. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much. And as I was looking over the roster of guests going to be at that conference, there's a lot of fascinating people that we've had on the show and people we love. And we'll just now add your name to that list.
I'm honored to be included on that list, brother. Those people on the roster are a phenomenal group of solid believers who love the Lord and who love the church. We're excited about
them. And they're passionate about their faith, and they're passionate about making a difference. And what a difference Dr. King made.
And that's exactly right. And I think they're people who are going to be not only encouraging to the body, but also fair to King's legacy in a lot of ways. So it's going to be a real honor to share some space with such godly men and women.
Yeah. Now, Jason, I don't believe I've been able to interview you on the show before. And so please tell our listeners and me a little bit more about you.
Yeah. So I'm originally from Birmingham, Alabama. I went to high school in Atlanta, Georgia, and I went to college in Mississippi. So I am a bit of a Southern transient. I grew up in the Word of Faith tradition, but through discipleship in college, God saved my soul and rescued me out of that. Played college football, played in the NFL briefly before God called me into ministry. I'm a graduate of Beeson Divinity School. And I've been a part of planting a couple different churches, and now I'm a preaching pastor at a church in Memphis. So my life has been a blessing from God, considering where He's taken me, a young man from the middle of nowhere, and I've been fortunate that He's used me in some really wonderful ways.
Oh, Jason, I so want to come to your church. I want to sit in the front row. I'm serious.
Welcome. You'd be welcome.
I know
anytime.
I would be. I know I would
We're
be.
We're a multi-ethnic fellowship, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So a lot of people, we talk regularly about Martin Luther King's legacy. Maybe talk a little bit about the real story.
Yeah. So King is a fascinating figure, one that unfortunately gets reduced to what I would refer to as the quotable king or the safe king. It tends to be messages of peace and nonviolence, excerpts from the I Have a Dream speech. But King was a very complex man. On one hand, he's the product of his rejection from conservative evangelical seminaries. So the liberal theology many people lament is a product of racist sentiments and segregation. On another hand, he is not a paragon for what we would consider Christian holiness, given the illicit relationships and such on the side. Mm-hmm. So when we speak about King, we tend to categorize him in those kind of two camps. We either love him because he's quotable and he speaks of peace and nonviolence and reconciliation and not judging someone by the color of their skin, but the content of their character, or we dismiss King because of his moral failings.
Mm-hmm.
What we're going to be looking to do at MLK 50 is present the entire King. Yes, the liberal scholar. Yes, we're going to deal with his moral failings, but we're also going to talk about King as a paragon for Christian love. What Dr. King taught the church through his ministry was what it means to love your neighbor. Everything from the organizing with the SCLC to the marches, to his Poor People's Campaign through the latter years of his life that ended up with his murder here in my city in Memphis was all aimed at loving your neighbor. And so what we're hoping to present and the lineups and the speaker choices and the plenary sessions and breakout sessions are all going to be aimed at presenting the full King. And we're going to deal and wrestle with the full King and not simply dismiss him for the areas of his life that we would personally or morally disagree with, or simply accept part of him.
Okay. That sounds like quite a lineup.
We are trusting the Lord to guide our steps, brother.
So when you look at Dr. King's life, what do you walk away with feeling extra inspired? Where's your heart explode?
Yeah, so I've growing up in Birmingham. We have a civil rights museum there in Birmingham. He was, of course, jailed in Birmingham, where his famous letter from a Birmingham jail, which was addressed to white clergymen in Birmingham, was written. So of my three heroes growing up, they were Jesus Christ, my father, and MLK.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about MLK being a young black man in the South was I was struck by his intellect, his brilliance. I was struck by his perseverance. And I think what makes my heart explode is given the amount of both spiritual and present danger and persecution he underwent, he ultimately lived his life for those who would come after him. Men and women such as myself who would see the work and would take up aspects of King's work later on down the road. It was the perseverance despite clear and present danger and the present harm that I look at that as an example of the persistent work of not only men, but also we should be as, if not more, persistent in the work of the gospel today.
Mm-hmm. Jason, let me take a little break. And when I come back, I want to continue our conversation. I'm speaking to Jason Cook. We're getting him from the Gospel Coalition, and we're talking about the Martin Luther King 50 conference that's coming up in Memphis, April 3 and 4. Be back in a minute. Welcome back. We are having a lovely conversation with Jason Cook. We're talking about the Martin Luther King Conference coming up in April, and we are celebrating his birthday today. And Jason, the whole conference sounds incredibly wonderful. Do you know what kind of attendance you're looking to have, and people from how many churches might show up for this?
Yeah, that's a good question. The short answer is we're not quite sure. But what we've been encouraged by is with early registration, early signups, and even with our present registration numbers, we're expecting anywhere between 2,500 to 5,000 people that will converge on the city of Memphis. And we're really excited about that, not just because of the size of the conference, but because of the exposure to our teaching of King and the unity that we're hoping to display with the National Civil Rights Museum here in Memphis with white and black Christians alike.
Mm-hmm. So I so appreciate this conference, and I think it's going to be a powerful time and a very time of, I guess, did I already use the word empowering?
Not yet, but that's okay. It's a great word,
isn't it? Because when do we not need encouragement? And when we as brothers and sisters in Christ come together, when good things don't come out of it, the gathering of community, the meeting of believers that sit down and have conversations over meals, we don't do that enough, do we, Jason?
No, we don't. And that's actually one of the reasons why I've given my life to the church, in that I think when you watch the example of Christ throughout the scriptures, doing some of his best ministry around meals, doing best ministry with people in the context of relationship. I think that's a great model, but too often we don't build relationships with people in order that spawn from true, genuine friendship. We tend to build relationships around people that we either need or that we network with, or even those that would friendship would be easy, i.e. those in our same ethnic demographic, if you will. But an event like this, as you say, Bill, is going to be so important because of the cross-pollination, if you will, of ethnic and socioeconomic groups that we can get together. And when brothers dwell in unity, I think it pleases the Lord and it's beneficial for us.
One of the things that I heard recently in a conversation I had, Jason, was that we're not building new friendships with non-believers. We're not doing a very good job of having them come to just trust us as people. We've got plenty of reasons to feel divided and polarized, yet it seems that the work that's really ahead of us is to imitate Christ by opening up the door to friendship and actually getting in a place where people trust us and we trust them that may not know the Lord.
Yeah, I think that's very astute. And I think spending a lot of time around non-believers, myself, I will tell you the level of distrust of the church and the seemingly moral compromising of the church has left a witness for Jesus in the world sullied, in a sense. And so I do believe there's much work we have to do in just that, building true friendships that are based in trust and compassion and truth. And yet, at the same time, we've got to realize that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, and that the mission of Christ will march on despite our incapable nature of being faithful all the time. And so I'm very confident in the mission and the work of God through the church. However, I do believe that Christians can be and should be much better friends.
That is a quality that is certainly something we can all work on as believers and followers of Jesus, to simply take that extra time to try to get to know someone that you may not know, and reach out that Christian hand of friendship, because evangelism is great, discipleship is the best, but we really can't put ourselves in a discipleship situation unless we've got people that are willing to sit down with us and spend time with us.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Tell me a little bit about your church and your ministry. I'm so fascinated by what we have spoken about over the decades as racial reconciliation. Although it's a word that I've heard and I've used myself, I don't even know if I know what it means.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'm currently serving at Fellowship Memphis, which is a multi-ethnic church in Memphis, Tennessee. We will be 15 years old this year.
Wow.
Birthed out of the Acts 29 church planting movement. John Bryson planted this church, and he brought a man named Brian Loritz as
Spoken
the primary teaching pastor voice, powerful, dynamic community brother. And through 15 years, what they said was, we want to wake up every day. We want to fight for Jesus against legalism, against racism, and against cultural Christianity. And so the first 4 years of the life of Fellowship Memphis, they saw very little to no racial diversity. It was a predominantly white church in a majorly black city. At that point, John Bryson, who was a lead pastor and planter of the church, essentially said, we will never achieve racial diversity if a white man is leading this effort. And so what he did was he handed the keys to the church to Brian Loritz, attached the lead pastor title to him, and said, you steer us, you drive us. And so what that signaled to the church and to Memphis was, we're serious about not only reconciliation, but we're serious about black leaders having power in the church. And so when that happened over the next 4 to 6 years, you know, the church just mushroomed in size. They went from 95% white to about 65% white, and the rest all sorts of other ethnicities. And so today we continue that work. And it's hard because reconciliation, many people think it's a handshake, but it's really more of a hug. And even more than a hug, it's a friendship building, trusting, coming together, putting all our dirt on the table and saying, how can the Lord deal with this, with us here together? And so it requires some hard conversation. So it's hard work.
Jason, I will continue to write. I'm writing your name down in my little prayer journal, and I will keep you in my thoughts and prayers. And as you approach the conference, I definitely want to get an update after the conference and look forward to another conversation with you.
Definitely. Bill, thanks for having
me. God bless you. Jason Cook from the Gospel Coalition. We'll take a short break and return in just a minute. Oh, what a great first hour. Thank you to Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. And to Jason Cook, what a fascinating interview we enjoyed with him. It is Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday today. We're going to continue with a great second hour just around the corner. Thanks for being with us. If you're enjoying a day off today, you're probably not even hearing my voice because you're still in bed with the covers up around your ears. That's okay, too. Have a great day if you're enjoying it as a holiday. Otherwise, stay tuned. We got lots more coming up in hour two. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.